tell you a little something about my parents. I grew up just outside of Barcelona, a child of two highly successful professionals. My father was a nurse, and my mother was a doctor. Well, naturally, I took to studying science. And after high school, I even did 1 year of med school, before eventually devoting my time fully to basketball. I sometimes think about what would have happened if I had stuck with medicine and followed in my parents' footsteps. Well, I remember how people would often mistake my father as the doctor and my mom as the nurse. Well, it happened more often than it should have, in my mind. To me, that my mother was a successful doctor, this was just the norm. And don't get me wrong, I admired my dad's hard work and job as well. But I grew up knowing that my mom got into a more rigorous school and program, and thus she had the more prominent job. That wasn't weird or a judgment in any direction. It was just the truth. And we never really thought twice about it. Growing up, my brothers and I always admired this standard set by our parents. And now that I'm an adult and looking forward to being a parent in the near future myself, I realize even how lucky I am to have been raised to that standard. It's a standard by which the only question worth asking, it isn't about if you're the right kind of person for your job, rather, it's about how well equipped you are for the job. In 37 years, I can honestly say I've never once thought of my mom as a female doctor. To me, she has always just been a doctor, and a great one too. Well, the big question on everyone's mind, it's a gender thing, or is it? World peace, religion, sex, money, politics, climate change, big business, big ideas, and big egos. Nothing is off limits. As I'm joined by some of the most accomplished and highly opinionated women from the far left, the far right, and the far reaches of the planet. This is Malcolm Out Loud, and you're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. A very interesting op-ed from Pau Gasol, the Players Tribune. It caught my eye for a lot of reasons. As you can see, that mom had become the doctor, his dad was the nurse. And yet there was a stereotype about all of this that, you know, society said it should have been something different. But yet this man only knew that was his norm, that his mother was the doctor. It gets very interesting from there. Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. It's Malcolm Out Loud here. Our co-host today on the show, Jennifer Breeden, is here. Jennifer is the president of Breeden Law International, focusing on legal consulting, international policies, with a special focus on human rights in the Middle East. Missy Crutchfield is here. She's co-founder of Gandhi's B Magazine and of Gandhi Global Center for Peace. Linda Martinelli is an entrepreneur. She's an owner and president of Proforma Graphic Print Source. So have you ever been in a situation in a doctor's office, in a hospital, in a med center, in some sort of a setting where that could have happened, where there was maybe a man and a woman there, and potentially your mind was wired that you thought that he was the doctor and she was the nurse? Because nurses, for a lot of us, were women.
Yeah.
I mean, can you speak to that point? Linda, start off here, the conversation with us. I mean, have you been in that position? Is that fair?
Well, I've never had that happen to me as far as doctors go, but I've actually had it happen to me in lots of things that I do in life, because it seems that most of the things that I've done in life have been kind of men's world. So, you know, starting in the police department and then having my own business. And probably the biggest one that I can remember is I coached my youngest son in Little League from the time that he was in T-ball. And there were no women coaches in that Little League. And, you know, we were so, I don't know, I guess discriminated against because the it was two moms coaching these boys, and you just didn't do that, right? And everybody, now we had two male assistant coaches, and everybody thought that those were the coaches and we were, you know, kind of the moms hanging around. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. We coached that team, and by the way, we were the winningest team ever, and we lost no games at all. So we were 100%, but we did that 4 years in a row with four different teams. And then we got some respect, but it took quite a while to get respect from people and get them to understand that we were capable as women.
Well, if you think about what you just say, that, you know, women have most all those skills, in fact, probably excel mm-hmm. in many of the skills needed to be a very successful coach, you see?
Well, and you know why, Malcolm? Because men tend to think with boys that they're boys, they should be able just to do this, throw a baseball, throw a hoop, whatever. They should be able to do it. Where as a woman, I wanted to teach them the mechanical skill to do that thing. And I think that that's what Becky Hammon does as well. I think that she has an intuitive way of looking at how people place that basketball that makes her a really great coach.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Missy, let's get back to that original question about the doctor nurse, because that's, to me, a perfect stereotype right there. First of all, have you ever been in that situation where you would have thought that she was the nurse and he was the doctor?
Yeah, I have to be honest. I have, and I've worked like mm-hmm. Linda in a men's world, and I do construction and rehabilitation and rehab house and in addition to the Gandhi Global Center for Peace and all of that. And so I'm in a men's world, but I think you know we're all, I think we have to just be very honest. We're all victims or survivors of mass media and stereotype. Constantly 24/7 reinforced. And so I think the most important, so we're going to, every once in a while, we're going to less now than 20 years ago, but I'm reflecting, you know, throughout my life. But several years ago, I made the decision that all of my, if possible, doctors, gynecologists, everything, especially gynecologists, why do we want, I mean, I know there's some great men out there, but we're women, we know our bodies, women know women's bodies. So I made the intentional decision choice to try to change out as many, or if one retired or, you know, wasn't practicing anymore, or in whatever profession, to replace that, to find the best person, but really seek a woman too. So not just finding a woman, but finding the best person, which also happened to be a woman. But you know, my health was really, I had been reading about men and male doctors treating women's symptoms and saying it's psychosomatic and, you know, kind of throwing it off to hormones or something. And I thought, you know, the best thing that I can do personally, and then I can share my stories and raise people's awareness that women in professional careers, and this has been going on 20-something years. The last few years, we have made incredible progress. So most people say now, it's like, yeah, I get it. But, you know, we've been cracking the ceiling now for, I don't know, decades, right? And we still got a lot of work to do. And guess what? We're always going to have work to do, because the second you fall asleep, then the system takes over again.
Well said. Well said. The second we fall asleep, the system takes over. Isn't that the truth, huh?
Yeah.
Well said. You know, Missy, the whole topic of the visit in the doctor's office is a very interesting one and could be a conversation onto its own, because, you know, men have the same sort of problem or concern as far as, you know, going to a female doctor, you know, and it depends upon what the problem is, really. But it gets a bit personal and it gets very interesting, actually, depending, again, what the problem is. And, you know, I mean, I could draw you some pictures there and you would understand. But in any event, let's move that along to Miss Breeden. Exactly. Miss Breeden.
Right.
Well, yeah. Well, there's certain features there, but all right. So, Miss Breeden, I got to tell you. So Missy was very forthcoming in mm-hmm. her position that, hey, yeah, it has happened to her. Have you ever been in that position where you would have taken her for the nurse and him for the doctor?
Of course, absolutely. I mean, I think we all, we all have, and I think that's this society. And to be honest, I am going to be honest here. I do think that's largely a United States thing, and I don't know what it is. I don't know what in our country and our culture and our society has perpetuated that brainwiring that we have going on, but it is there. It is prevalent. And one of the things that helped me notice that, honestly, and I know I do this a lot, but it is true. I've spent so much time in the Middle East, so much time in these countries working with people there. And obviously, there's a distinct area that I've been to in certain places and certain women that will talk to me. But the truth is, the women, especially the ones that are trying to stand up against, fascist or oppressive Islamist or Sharia regimes against women, they've become so strong, and it's almost this sense they have that they've been knocked down blatantly. I think in America it's been quiet because it's not cool. It's not cool to not have women's rights. It's not cool to not say women shouldn't do this job or women don't do this job. That's not cool, so you don't say it publicly. So it's this kind of silent brainwiring or the way that we see things or things appear. Whereas in the Middle East, it's so blatant in your face, and they don't have these shows kind of just feeding you one by one. It's not smart. They just yell it out there. So these women are much stronger in that. I mean, my goodness, you have women in Iran are the ones leading the protests. Women, there's a woman in Pakistan that goes around in her, full Islamic garb. She goes around and she graffitis and spray paints the sides of walls to provide women's rights and human rights principles for minorities all over there, knowing she could be arrested or killed in any moment. And these women just don't care anymore. And I think for us, it's just been raised in a society where is this sort of silent brainwashing, this rewiring of our minds. And we don't even realize it until maybe even we're on a show like this, as Missy and Linda were saying, where it's like, you know what? I think I have done that. I have done that. Or I'm a part of that. And even to the point where we have to tell and help raise our own families to not be wired that way. Mm-hmm. Even if they are, which is something that my husband and I are going through. I mean, my husband was raised on a farm. He was raised by farmers in a farm town where college was not okay. It was not accepted. Now, my husband, and Malcolm, you know, this is brilliant. He's a brilliant radio guy, a host. He's a producer, and he knows his tech stuff. He was wiring phone lines and, breaking into his parents' phone lines when he was 11 just because he could. And he was able to do all the – oh, I love these stories – but he's brilliant, but he was never encouraged to go to college because you don't do that in a farm town. And I did. I got my degree with honors. I went to law school. I studied all these things. I worked. I lived in D.C. I've traveled. And so we've known before we even got married, he has four kids and I love my stepchildren. They're absolutely incredible. Three boys and a girl. But they know, we know, and we've taught them and we've talked to each other that in our marriage, in our family, I'm going to be the main breadwinner, and that's okay. And he's okay with that. But we realize, we laugh about it. We're going to have to spend a lot of our time, not just the children get it. They know it. They know my work, where I've gone to college. And they've been raised in a factory farming area too, where college isn't accepted, but then they see my success, which encourages them, to do it if they want to. And if they don't, that's fine too. But we're also going to have to explain to society when they see us, people are automatically assuming, oh yes, yes, John. And he's a local radio guy, but that's not his heart's desire. His heart's desire is to, help my work and help raise the kids at home. And people never understand. They just look at us like, wait, so you're the one that works and he's the one that stays home with the kids. That doesn't make sense. And so we're always having to either educate them, rewire ourselves. And it's something, it's a societal issue in America that has really, like I said, gone back and rewired us, a societal issue that has become so silent and prevalent that we don't realize it until after it's too late. We don't realize it till we walk in the doctor's office and say, hello, doctor. And he says, actually, I'm the nurse.
Right. Wow. Well said.
Yeah, people look at that as a weakness, clearly, Jennifer. And your prime case for this story today, because of everything you just explained. I want to ask you something, Jennifer. You mentioned the Middle East, of course, and you work out there. And what came to my mind, one of the areas upon many, is, for instance, the Kurdish women, some of the most strongest women on the planet, and the work that they do. The Kurdish women can they can probably outshoot, outrun, and outmaneuver a lot of the men.
Oh yeah,
and they're truly, truly amazing. And I want to ask you, Why is it that some of the women out there, as you describe, and I'm touched by the moment when you say, well, you don't know why some of that's happening in the States the way it is, why these stereotypes have been allowed to ferment the way they have. What I'm wondering is, you take the Middle East, you take a lot of these women out there. I mean, listen, women don't have rights necessarily out in the Middle East. I mean, they're behind a lot of the times for just having basic rights. I mean, really, really basic rights. Why is it that many of these women are in the position now? Why is it that we're looking at this and maybe, I don't know, are they more advanced or are they in a different position of thinking? Or how did that point impact women out in the Middle East compared to the States here, where it's totally different? It's a little messy there. I think I'm having a trouble connecting the wires as to, I mean, they're actually mm-hmm. not, you know, they're behind the times, you would think, Jennifer, but yet why are they, mm-hmm. are we saying they're more advanced in this particular?
It's a good question. No, I see where you're going with that. Yeah. And I love it because I have two examples of this, two great examples. So we'll start with the Kurds. As you know, I do a lot of work with the Kurds. I love the Kurds. I call myself a honorary Kurd, but they are incredible people. But the thing with the Kurds is that their entire upbringing has been fighting for survival. So look at it this way. They are descendants of ancient Medes who were spread out in throughout the land of Mesopotamia. Used to be partnered very close ethnicity with the Persians or now Iranians, but kind of spread throughout Mesopotamia, which is now southeastern Turkey, northern Syria, Iraq, and Iran. And it's this whole area. They were supposed to be given a country after World War One. The leaders of World War One literally just changed their minds and said, no, we're going to spread you out between those four countries, and we're going to carve out the Middle East that way. So that's why you have Kurds in four different countries. And so in Iraq, the ones I have the most experience working with and visiting and being there, you know, their lives have always been because they're an ethnic minority. They're not Arab. So when you look at Saddam Hussein reign, this Arab nationalism, they weren't Arab, so they were targeted that way. And they're more secular. They, you know, a lot of them were Islamized during the Ottoman rule and things like that because they were generally Zoroastrian or really not much of any kind of religion. But they were Islamized, but they never really bought into it in that fundamental aspect that some other extremists have. They never bought into it. And because of that, that's why they've been hated. People will say, well, Kurds are Muslim. Yes, maybe on the birth certificates, but they never bought into it to that extent, studied it so much because they were always ostracized or targeted.
The cultural differences of these geographical locations, Jennifer, and how they relate to what's happening here. The bottom line is there's a lot to learn from all of this. And a lot of what you just put out there is very teachable, but we can learn a lot of the cultural shift and the strife that's out there and how that relates back to what we're doing here that's different. There's a couple of interesting really takeaways from what you say there. The fact that they're fighting for their survival, that is one big point that might play into some things. Yeah, very, very interesting. Well, again, successful doctors, successful coaches, we've all been in that position, and it is, if we're going to be honest, if you're all going to be honest with this conversation, listen, I mean, is it like this in every other country? I can't speak to that. But my guess is it probably isn't far removed from this. I think it's a cultural phenomenon. But if you're in the room and there's a man and a woman there, we do tend to assume she's the nurse, he's the doctor. Let's take a deeper look at that right after this pause. The Out Loud Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. All right, we're back. Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure, Season 2. And very interesting story here from Pau Gasol here of the San Antonio Spurs. You know, I like this story about his mom and his dad because it really puts a spotlight on the problems we've, you know, that we're seeing with a lot of these stereotype situations. But it dawns on me, like, where does this all stem from? And what comes to my mind, ladies, is you have to bring it and dial it all the way back to, again, there's been a big cultural shift over the last, well, I don't know how many years. I mean, certainly the last 30 years. I'm going to say at least 30, ladies. There's been a big, big shift here. And the shift is that, at one point, I mean, ladies were home raising families. They simply were not out in the work environment, the vast majority of them. Of course, there's always an exception to the rule, but I'm talking the majority of ladies. Women were at home. That was the role. I mean, bring it back to, you remember the show? I mean, not to be funny here, but ladies, you remember the show Little House on the Prairie?
Yes.
I mean, women were not, they were home. Where were they? They were home. But that was a big hit show and a cultural phenomenon at the time. Now, why was that such a hit show? Jennifer, why was that such a hit show back then?
Oh, I mean, it was a hit show. It was a hit show because it was a good show. It was good, wholesome family fun. But it's exactly what we were talking about, how the wiring started. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything,
exactly.
The wiring started because of these silent things that we don't even think about. And so, yeah, Little House on the Prairie was good. Everyone loved Laura Ingalls, Wilder.
But they were
stuff,
home.
And
they were women.
But
they
it was
were home.
And it was women and they were home. But that's not the only show. Yeah. How many shows from the
exactly.
50s, 60s, 70s,
all
80s always show that the man's working, woman's at home? In fact, the first show, and they only did a season of this because it ended up switching later in the storyline, but in the first season of Last Man Standing with Tim Allen's old show, it was that he was demoted and his wife was making a lot more money as a scientist, and it was this really crazy plot line that made the show kind of blow up because it was considered, quote, a crazy plot line.
So
and that's why, it's because we've been raised with these shows, and that's one of the things with the Middle East. They don't have a lot of TV, the shows, the sitcoms. They don't have any of that we do, so we
right.
start this wiring from watching these things over and over and over, and that's what we think is normal is what's on TV.
So a lot of these shows then we're grown up with, I bring it back, Linda, to where this all kind of comes from, and I think there's something to what Jennifer is saying, as well as why I put it out there is, we grew up with the Little House on the Prairie. We grew up with the Leave It to Beaver kind of thing, if that was, if that was there when you were growing up. I don't want to date anybody here, but
And those shows were, I mean, the men and women didn't even sleep in the same bed in those shows. I grew up with my mom being the traditional mom, staying home with the kids, mm-hmm. and my dad went out and, earned the money. And that's how many of us grew up, which is why we are where we are. If you remember, we did a Life Liberty show where we talked about that a woman couldn't get a credit card unless her husband co-signed for her. So things have come a long way since then. And it's really interesting because my mother was very traditional, and all of her kids, there was five of us, every one of them is an entrepreneur. And I'm not sure exactly how that happened because four of them are girls and they all have their own businesses. So it's really interesting that from that traditional background, we all somehow got a strength from her that said, it's okay to do more in your life than I'm doing.
Linda, that is interesting. And how many girls again, Linda?
Four girls and one boy.
Yeah. Now, I have five sisters, by the way, Linda. And so I'm very familiar with that as well. And I'm the same type as what you say. My mom was a phenomenal mother. She was a stay-at-home mom. I mean, that's what she did. Her career was family. I mean, and she worked hard all the time. But, again, she falls right into that Leave It to Beaver, Little House on the Prairie. This was the role of women for a lot of years, Missy. This is what they did.
Yes, but that's only part of their role. And I, let me speak out a little more about my feelings, too, because my father was in politics and almost every one of his campaign managers were women. So I was very blessed that I had the support and I had close family, immediate family members that were making choices to honor the brilliance, the strategical, the whatever, and women were leading. So that was very important to me. I also want to, and Mother's Day was not too long ago, to pay a tribute to my grandmother. And I spent so much time with my grandmother during summers, every summer, my grandmother, my grandfather, but my grandmother, they were farmers. They were very poor. Every dime they got, they would buy land. So they ended up having an enormous amount of land, but just they were farmers and they would go out every day before the sun came up and work the fields and come home at the end of the day. And all the workers would be laying on the couches and everything else. And my grandmother, after being out all day in the fields, would then move to go to the stove and cook dinner for everyone. So that's the part of the story you see the women with the aprons and waiting for the husband to come home. She's out in the fields and then she's doing everything else at home too.
Amen. And I want to piggyback on what Missy's saying here, because, you know, that's one of the things I've spoken on. My mother was the same way. She stayed at home. She was a homemaker. But my mother, like, and I think it's the same with all mothers that have done this. My mom would really make it very clear that her heart's desire was to be a mother, and she had the hardest job. And oh my gosh, do moms have the hardest job in the world? Yeah. I'm just going to throw that out there. Yeah, my husband had four kids. Yeah. I married into four kids, you guys, like from ages 14 to four. And I love those kids with all my heart, but oh my gosh, there is no learning curve for this business. Right? And I'm like,
but you
what
can do
in
it.
The world?
You're superwoman.
I have no idea how to do it. And, but I mean, it's just, that is the hardest job in the world. And I said that before I even became an Insta mom. You know, I said I cannot imagine how people can do this. It's one thing to go to the Middle East. It is another thing to raise four kids or any amount of kids, because that is no joke. And I think that there are women, and I think it's okay that women have a genetic disposition that makes them maternal, it makes them love. That doesn't mean that men don't, and they don't desire that as well. But I have always stood up for the fact that my mom, a woman who speaks three languages, three and a half, really, but she speaks fluent native Portuguese, Brazilian. She is brilliant. She got a degree in international relations. My mom could have done anything she wanted. She could have worked for the government speaking native type languages fluently. And her heart's desire was to be a mom. Wow. And she was an awesome mom at that. And so I celebrate her for that, because she can still do what she wants. She still works with refugees and translates things and immigrants and helps them learn English and helps be able to do things. I can't tell you how many times I've called her if I'm helping with a worker here whose English isn't so great, and I'll just put my mom on the phone and have her talk to him. And all these things, which doesn't say much for my Spanish, but, you know, it's the fact that a woman who could have done anything, that was her desire. And we need to celebrate the desires. It's the fact that we're wired to think that women can't have another choice, so that women like myself, like Linda, like others who are moms, but whose passion is to be the breadwinner or to go out and work or be the doctor, be the lawyer, be anything, where we're the ones that, and that's been the biggest struggle, is not in those who are moms, who desire to be moms. The biggest struggle for me has been that I've been wired in my brain that I can't do my job. I can't be the breadwinner. I can't keep doing the human rights advocacy work that I do now that there are four kids here, because I'm a woman. So I have to step into that role. And none of the kids are saying that. My husband isn't saying that. It's what I've been wired to believe.
You look at Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and she says that raising her small kids, because she has several kids under 6 years old, has helped her to deal with the likes of some of the reporters from CNN, because, you know, all the whining, she's used to it, so she can take it, you know, with a grain of salt there.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's and also very encouraging. I need to hear that.
Yeah.
Chat with her.
Well, she does say that, but she does it more to be sarcastic, Linda, not as an encouraging moment. I mean, so there's a little difference from Sarah.
But you know what, Malcolm, being a mom teaches
it.
You, does yeah. teach mm-hmm. you a lot. First of all, teaches you an incredible amount of patience, because you have to have it. So multitasking, I mean, it's a great
Well, there are certain ground. Characteristics, let's agree on something here. There are certain attributes and characteristics that females possessed that are different than males. One of them, as I recall, looking at these studies over the years, is that women are better at multitasking. They're better at doing multiple things at once. They're better, their eye vision is differently, the way they see things. It's just, they're different. We're wired differently. Again, that whole thing, men, Mars, women, Venus, is that what it is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus, yes.
Right. Do you know what I'm saying? We're different. Yeah, that's what I'm driving at here. Whatever
different.
The
mm-hmm.
Sure. And we should celebrate those differences. Yes. I think one of the first shows, well, the first show that we did this year on Life Liberty, Jennifer, it was you and I, we talked about a woman being president.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And Amen. You know, the point is, and I made it then and it's the same now, is it's not that a woman should or shouldn't be president. It is whoever the right person is. And that's the same thing that Pau Gasol is saying as far as Becky being a coach. She is the right person. She has all the skills, and now is her time. So what he's saying doesn't just have to do with women. It has to do with race. It has to do with every single thing that you could leave somebody out of because of whatever reason. He's saying, no, pick the right person, regardless of what sex they are, what color they are, what religion they are, pick the right, right person, and that she's the right person. And I love that thought, because that's how we all should be picking people, instead of by all of the criteria that we're looking at, especially in our politically correct world, we should be picking the right person for every job. And she is a qualified right person.
Yeah, and this letter, you know, Malcolm, thank you so much for choosing this show and this letter to for us to revolve the conversation around, because it's just amazing. I'm now a fan of Pau Gasol and want to know more about this sport, because I've never really, you know, been that interested in sports. But if I can read a couple of things from the end of the letter, which to me, I mean, he's just so brave and articulate. I mean, this man is brilliant. He says at the end of the letter, because to me, this league, it's a family. And one of the things that comes with being a family, it's that you're the ones who can be the most critical of each other. You're the ones who can most tell it to each other like it is, because at the end of the day, you know, it's all love. So what I would say to my MBA family right now, I think, is, hey, let's all keep up the great work. Let's be proud, but let's not be satisfied. In the last paragraph, he hits on some really controversial things, but he does it exquisitely. He said, let's recognize that one protest does not mean we have solved the problem of racial inequality in this country. One parade doesn't mean we're doing everything we can for the LGBTQ movement. And one coaching interview doesn't mean we have solved the issue of gender diversity in our workplace. A more complacent league, it might take a look at these accomplishments and be comfortable saying, okay, we did it, we're finished. But the NBA is not a complacent league. It's a great league.
Right. Well, he is, it's a very compelling letter. It's an open letter, first of all, that he writes, and he does hit on some really, really good points, Missy.
Yes.
No question.
I teared up when I read this.
And he makes really you think. Open. Yeah. He makes you think. Mm-hmm. When you're diving further into this, you know, some of the, I've been recently looking at various studies with the difference between men and women. And I think some of it plays into what we're talking about today, as it's been on my mind as I'm looking at these different surveys and different research stats about the difference between the gender. And there are several points to bring up that are interesting. There was a research done out of Missouri that, and listen to this, ladies, boys are more likely to take risk than girls. That's true.
And does you it say it's genetic or trained?
That's a good question, Linda. I don't know. Let me see here. The responsive kids rode a stationary bike while watching a hyper-realistic simulation. When confronted with a hazard, the boys were much slower to brake than the girls. That was the study, Linda. If it was real, many of the boys would have been seriously injured. Do you see? Because they went for it, in other words, and the girls did not. So they did simulated collisions and things like that. Very interesting. Very scientific. So, but I just know intuitively.
I don't think that, I took part in that study.
Yeah, well, maybe not.
I know,
Jennifer.
Right? Me too. Yeah.
But well, yeah, I don't know. Sure, you can say that. Maybe that's the case. I don't know. But as a rule, if you think about that in your life, I mean, men take more risk. I think that's pretty out there.
Oh, so I disagree with you. I disagree with you that they. First of all, we are culturally brought up when we're small kids. So girls are taught to play with dolls and boys are taught to play with, you know, other things, baseball bats or whatever. And if given equal circumstances, girls are just as likely to do the same things as boys are. And there's so many risk takers. For heaven's sakes, there's a 91-year-old woman who just flew up on top of a biplane and set the world record for the oldest woman to do that. It wasn't a guy who did it. It's all about every individual is individual. And I think a lot of that is how they're brought up and not necessarily that they're boys and girls. Right. Although I do give a whole lot of credit to testosterone, because I do think that the sex differences is very, very powerful. But I there's so many kinds of risks you can take in life. And what you're talking about there, Malcolm, is kind of a, you know, physical risk, you know, like more daredevil kind of risk type of thing. And maybe guys are better at that than girls, but women are also willing to take a lot of risks that men aren't willing to take. I think they're willing to go forward with, you know, maybe financial risks or things that guys are are not. So, you know, I think we're pretty equal.
Spoken as a strong executive woman should say. That's exactly correct. I would expect nothing more different from you, Linda. Yeah, you disagree. Let me correct the record for you. You disagree with the study. This is not my opinion. Yeah, you say you disagree with me. It has nothing to do with me. I'm not talking about my opinion here. I'm talking about researchers in Missouri. And this is the stats they did.
But that's part of the problem in America, though. Where was this study? Where was the test pool? Right. Like, as you're talking, like, right. I love it that I love you getting the facts, Malcolm, because I love how you do that, the due diligence. But it is true that, as even you were saying, too, and as we've been talking about, you know, that's the problem in this country is like, where was the study? Where was this pool? Was it some small town with one church and, you know, one whatever where generally it is true women get married at 21 and all the little girls are raised with dolls and other things like that? Or was it a bigger area where there is there more
diverse
Well,
you could take
population?
A look at a lot of these studies. Yeah, I mean, Jennifer, you could analyze. You're absolutely correct. You'd have to analyze every one of these and these studies or these thoughts to really get down to the point of it. But, you know, it does sort of come back to the individual, I think, what Linda says. I think back to growing up as a little boy with girls and boys around playing in the woods and trees and things. And there were plenty of girls that were tomboys that would be daredevils that would jump off the tree or jump to the next tree or what have you. But I got to tell you, the majority of them would not. And, you know, you could say, well, they don't take the same risk as a daredevil, as you would say, Linda, than the boy. Maybe potentially, Linda, maybe the better way to look at it is maybe they're just smarter.
Mm-hmm. And I think, I love that. Thank you, Malcolm. I think that there is something to be said for some of these new personality type tests that have come out. Like, I'll use the Myers-Briggs. You know, we've all heard about that. Most of us have taken it. Yeah. But I think that what that test does is it goes beyond some of these other things that have happened, these stereotypes where, women are nurturing and nice and motherly and stay in the kitchen and men do this, this, and this. And it's that stereotype that we were raised with. So having these personality, like Myers-Briggs comes out and it can tell you what percentage of the population you were to make us start thinking. For example, they have you have all the different types, but one type is how you make decisions, where people make decisions either with their heart or with their head, basically. You're either thinkers or feelers. So the feelers make decisions with their hearts based on feelings, other people's emotions, and the thinkers make decisions based on what's most efficient. This makes sense. This will just be better, solution oriented. And I mean, you know, generally in the beginning, as those tests came out, more women rated as feeling thinkers or as feelers when they make decisions and more men as thinkers. But I am a total thinker. I say things and they hurt sometimes and I have to think twice. And it's not to say that any personality type is good or bad. It's just to show the variations in populations. And my husband is a heart thinker. And so it's to show how we can all work together to do that. But then it takes the gender part out of it. And it just says, you know, this is how you make decisions
take
generally.
Take the gender thing out. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that, Jennifer.
Take
the gender part out of it. Well, listen, you know, really, Jennifer, I mean, I totally understand it. I mean, I think a lot of men listening probably understand it. We know, I know a lot of guys that learn. I'm sure they realize that strong women are a major attribute. As an executive myself, I've seen that in the workplace often, more than once. Some of the studies that I've been looking at and some of the other pieces, which I had started to put together because I wanted to do a show on this particular topic, separate from this one, but some of them you ladies may not totally agree with. As I mentioned, the one that Linda sort of got really rambunctious on and came after. What do you mean? We take more risk. What are you talking about, Malcolm? You can't say that, you know. But of course, you know, these are these kinds of things. And then Jennifer points out, rightfully so, well, but where's this done? Is it a big city, a small city, one church, five churches? Who said it? Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, you're right. Anything can be manipulated and data can be manipulated anywhere at all. But there's some other interesting things like that make you think, are females easier to startle? Are they easy to startle? Women, it goes on, some of these things, and women also exhibit a stronger emotional response to the anticipation of pain. Males are more likely to overestimate their ability. It gets very interesting and scientific when you're saying that. I hear in my ears, Jennifer says, well, take the gender out of it. But it is interesting. And then you kind of look at some of these, and I know the ladies will have something to say about this as they chop my head off right after the break here.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Well, we're talking today, friends, about this stereotype breakdown of men and women being coaches, doctors. I read that very interesting piece up top of the show there. Very, very fascinating, where the mom was a doctor, the dad was the nurse, and yet, you know, this was very normal in that family, but others looked at it differently because it's sort of a societal shift in how we think. We've kind of explored a lot of different things on the show today as to why that is the way it is. Ladies, you know, today on the show, Linda Martinelli's here, Jennifer Breeden, Missy Crutchfield. And ladies, I've been looking at a lot of these various stats and things on the genders. And again, as I come down here, maybe some of these aren't just stereotypes. You know, females are easier to startle, this here says. This was demonstrated in a scary stimuli study that measured fear through electrical sharks to the skin, in other words, they're saying here. Interesting, huh? Where's that study at? Jennifer would say, what are you talking about? I don't know all the particulars, but you can dive into this stuff. Women also exhibit a stronger emotional response to the anticipation of pain. Is there something to that, ladies? I guess, is there anything to that, do you think?
Why don't we put a bunch of men through childbirth real quick?
And well, now that would be fascinating.
Women have a stronger tolerance for pain. They have a stronger pain.
Absolutely.
Scientifically have a stronger pain.
Absolutely.
So we know pain's going to hurt us a lot more because we can handle more than men can.
Maybe that's
why.
It. Yeah.
Exactly. That's why, you know, if you want to skew it and you say all these things, it's the research, you can prove anything you want. We all know that with statistics. But they say, you know, women's aversion to pain. It's because we experience pain so much more than men. Our threshold is higher than men. So we know what we're up against. So nobody, you know, they're not factoring in that. They want to put everything in a little box and say, you know, women this, men that. You know, yes, probably more women are wired to be from their heart. We're nurturers, and that's part of being mothers. But it doesn't mean that we're afraid. I think on the contrary, I think we're stronger. We're more willing to face these things. We'll do whatever it takes. When the mother bear, the mama bear,
oh,
you hear the papa bear,
boy.
But the mama bear is the first
Never.
One that.
Never
in
get
animals,
in the way of a mama
bear. That's the
thing
in the animal kingdom. It's never like if you
exactly.
see a baby
right.
around, then you
exactly.
see the male nearby, you're right. like, I'm fine. You see the female.
Well, Jennifer.
Exactly.
Listen, ladies, this is totally spot on. I have to tell you right now, I mean, I've got family members and others. I have to tell you, and I've seen this. I mean, this is so blatant in your face. And you guys out there know what I'm talking about. You never cross. Anytime you, how do I say to you, like, a mother will protect the children no matter what. And sometimes you hear and see these bizarre cases where the kid does some crazy stuff, and the mother is there still to protect the kid. Where
she lifts the car up, right.
Whatever it is. But you see these things. And I know people in that I've seen in my own life that you always know never to step in the middle or in the way of a mother-child relationship, because that kid can do no wrong.
I am the hardest person on my kids than anybody.
Exactly.
But you can't be hard on them.
Yeah.
You can't
Although I'm a really realistic person. If they're wrong, they're wrong. And I don't defend them when they're wrong. And that's something that I've always done and will continue to do. But yeah, I'm going to defend... I'm going to defend my family.
Mama Bear will
sure.
always do that, guys. I mean, that's just the way it is. That's another thing when we use the word guys. Is that an insult to ladies?
No.
No. Okay. Everybody said no? All right. Because that's a
no.
That's a metaphor, again, people say when you... Sometimes, Linda, lately, I find myself when I'm sometimes sending an email or I'm sending some correspondence to some of you all even, which are a lot of women in the show. And sometimes I'll say, you know, inadvertently in my mind, I'll say something like, oh, hey, how you guys doing today? And then I thought, oh, God, you can't say that. Stop it.
Yeah, you don't need
to walk
on eggshells.
That's a shame that you have to think
well,
that way.
Well, it's the way it is today. It's society,
well, but
Linda.
It shouldn't be that way.
We
and don't buy into that.
Each other.
Yeah, but they want to drop the man out of mankind. They want it to be people kind. They want to be, you know, it's all of this stuff. So you sort of kind of, but this
they
is
they are
where,
the same got... people that did this test you're reading from.
Well, that's it, Jenna. But didn't this all start somewhere? Didn't
but then you do have the pronoun.
Though. You do have the interesting pronoun conversation with the millennials. So that's. I think we've done that show actually.
Well, but I'm saying if
is
you want to know where this
thing of we don't understand, we're talking about practicality, wiring, the 50s, the 60s, things like that. It's not
well,
just a millennial.
Sure.
Okay, how do we fix this? We fix this by pronouns. I mean, no, you fix it by rewiring.
Exactly.
But ladies, if you're you, but back to this point. Now hold that point right there that Jennifer says, Linda, and now. Now, if we're talking about the guys or mankind or the boys, isn't that, I mean, talk to me. Isn't that back to a cultural shift? And isn't that sort of, you know, the early onset of stereotyping?
Well, we are stereotyping and all this stuff about, you know me, I don't like the whole politically correct anything.
I know you don't.
And, you know, just say guys, Malcolm, and leave it at that. You know, one of my good friends has a daughter who's, I think she's in her late 20s or maybe around 30, and she is a welder, okay, and she's working on vehicles and so forth. That's a stereotype that I don't see women doing that much, but boy, is she really good at what she does, and we just need to drop all of this political correctness and get back to treating people as they are. Everybody's an individual, and I want to treat them as that instead of as a class of people.
Yeah, maybe. But I think there's still something to it, potentially. I hear what you say, and I don't disagree with what you're saying. But Jennifer, isn't there something more to this if we're talking about where the seed of this is at? And we're talking about, hey, guys, or, you know, because that's all up for discussion right now. It's a lot in the political sphere. Some politically correct talk is what it is. You can't say mankind. You can't say the boys. You can't say guys. You got to say what, right?
And you know what, Malcolm? I like humankind. Yeah. I like humankind. We're human beings.
See, Missy would fall into the case. See, it's a liberal mindset that brings that up. So I can see why Missy would say that, because it's a liberal mindset, mostly. Let's be real here, people.
If we're back to being humans and put more emphasis in our reprogramming, mind you, in our reprogramming.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Is there something more to it, Missy, do you think? Huh?
It wouldn't matter as much if this country hadn't fallen as far as it has in terms of wiring our brains, the green, little greenhouse, I don't know, Little House on the Prairie syndrome, these other shows, these Leave It to Beaver things.
Maybe a syndrome.
If we hadn't been so rewired to think this and to negatively put these things down and told other things, if we didn't have the mass media infiltration that the United States of America has had over the last 50 years, I think that is why, and I'll agree that it's a liberal mindset or things like that, but that is why people like Missy and others in human rights activists will talk about needing to change these words, because it is so far gone that we honestly don't know how else to fix it.
We need a correction.
We change some of these words. Yeah. We need a correction. Yeah. We need direction change. And it's just, it's one solution, but it's not the solution like this article said.
Well, we did an interesting two-part series on racism sometime back, ladies, you might recall. It was really outstanding conversation. It was a two-show series we did on it. And we touched in there about the media, the way they've taken all of this and hijacked it all. But they are definitely using these things to divide. In fact, one of the shows is keeping the people divided, you might remember. And we they are keeping the people divided. That's all part of the master plan. That's how they empower themselves, just to keep the people divided. One of the ways you do that is through some of the stuff we're talking about today, ladies. You know, that's how they do it, basically.
Well, Malcolm, even this test you're reading about, you know, women are weaker, women can't handle pain, women can't do this. I wonder when that test was released. And when it was published and when it came out and when it took on, I mean, did it come out as these women's rights protests were starting and other things like that, or the Me Too movement? You know, how many tests came out showing that women were weaker and more emotionally fragile and other things like that as the Me Too movement was coming around? That's where my brain goes.
It is fascinating. Yeah, it is fascinating. There's something One other thing I want to just share with you all right here that I find very interesting, and see if you agree with any of this or not. Males are more likely to die from an accident than females. Okay, so listen to this. As mentioned, men are more likely to take risk and overestimate their ability. So there's a good and a bad there. I know you can hear Linda already knocking me in the head. What do you mean you take more risks? Shut up already. But, you know, and overestimate their ability. So there's the other part of that, Linda.
I agree.
Now you agree. See, so now when we can see, you guys are all, you play right into this stuff, because now, you know, well, I agree. You guys are not so wonderful. You overestimate your ability. Anyway, you know, it's interesting. So there's a lot of gender. Listen, so let me go on here. Psychologists at Boston University figured that this is probably why almost all drowning victims are male. How do you like that stuff, ladies? More boys, more guys, more males drown than females. Now that,
yeah, that just goes to brains. I'm sorry. Well, that doesn't go,
sure,
to risk or fear.
I said that earlier, you know, Jennifer. I said to you, maybe
that
they're smarter. Yeah, I know you don't give me credit for the things when I stand up for the women, ladies, but I did say that about a half hour ago.
I agree.
If you rewind
that,
the tape, ladies, you'll find that I said that. So
that's interesting. I wonder how drowning. I mean, I know that I see a lot more men. I mean,
I love it.
You know, because a lot more men will dive into like a shallow place and hit their head and
because
end up drowning,
shallow,
that kind of thing.
Is it some stupid bet they lost or challenge that somebody put them up to?
The boys are shallow, Missy. So I want to finish reading this. Right, boys are way more likely to do dangerous things, especially if other boys are around, because they want to show off, in other words. Yep. They're way less likely to listen to the warnings of their parents. They get into trouble more and less likely to tell anyone if they had an accident. U.S. data shows that boys are more likely than girls to be seriously hurt or killed in accidents like the misuse of a firearm or a head injury from riding a bike, or even these killers that go in and kill people and mess cultural things are all boys and men.
Yep.
So there's some.
So then let's rename this test from men are more likely to take risks to men are more likely to take stupid risks.
Yeah,
men are more likely to take smart risks.
Amen, sister.
I'm just saying. Hey, I'll start a business and divert some of my funds. Is start a business, travel to a dangerous place, but I have contacts there, so I know exactly how I'm going to stay alive and get around there. That's a smart risk. Women will do that. Men will just jump off a building. That looks like concrete. It should be soft.
Yeah, right?
Very interesting.
Not you, Malcolm. Boys.
Not you, Malcolm.
I can relate to this because
not
I
you,
have
Malcolm. I love you, Jennifer.
Three boys.
You have three boys, yeah.
Oh, my.
This is really very...
Too much.
Very, very interesting. I'm going to do a separate production on this because I've got some interesting. I'm armed with these things, ladies. You can't believe how armed I am. Oh yeah, but I've got all kinds of different things. Very interesting. Men are more likely to perceive a neutral face as unfriendly during puberty. Let's see here. Men they influence a boy's brain to perceive neutral faces as unfriendly. What is this all about? Researchers in Maine gave teenagers a single dose of vasopressin and found that the girls were more likely to rate neutral faces as friendly, while the teen boys rated neutral faces as unfriendly or hostile. What do you think of that, ladies?
I wonder if that goes way back to caveman time when men were the protectors and they needed to, you know, make instant judgments. I mean, we all make instant judgments, and women just tend to be more nurturing and maybe a little bit more trusting. I don't know. I do think that there's definitely a difference between the sexes. So don't misunderstand that, because I celebrate that. I want that to be. We are different. We just are. God made us different. But
it shouldn't limit what we reach for,
men,
is what you're saying, Linda.
No. I don't. Exactly. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Nothing should be limited.
Yeah,
there's
your
the same
point
we learn
is,
in law school. There's the same we learn in law school, and I would say this applies to every test or anything we ever hear from mainstream media or mass publicized media outlets. The saying is that anytime someone asks you a question, you know, do you buy into this? Do you buy into this? Or what is, you know, this is what this says, should always answer with, well, it depends. It depends. It depends. Yeah. Who did you ask? What were the faces like? Were the faces of people that were doing the test? So they trusted them already, and their discerning nature showed them that. I mean, who are the faces? Was it some small town where everybody looks like each other and the entire community is Dutch? And so the neutral face you showed was somebody that looks just like their dad or their second uncle. You know, I mean, everything depends on something, and I think it's different depending on the person, just as we were saying, Malcolm.
Well, I'll tell you, this is really interesting. And last thought here, males are more likely to exhibit aggression physically, while females are more likely to exhibit aggression verbally. So the women,
that's true.
Yeah,
what
so
that's your testosterone, right?
Well, men will punch you in the face, and the woman will tell you to get
off
somewhere.
That's what they're programmed to do.
All right, interesting. So we agree on that one, at least, friends. That's interesting.
She'll destroy you in a way that you don't realize.
Oh boy! It gets really interesting. I'll tell you what. We are going to do a break-off show on this because I actually had saved a lot of this data and studies and. I find it really interesting, but it really does get into the whole gender thing a little bit more. But again, as we talked about on this show, the stereotypes, where it comes back to the stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And again, that beautiful op-ed letter that we started this conversation with that I fully, fully support and believe, as many of you out there do as well, that, again, it's a different world today as it should be. Women absolutely are... They should be at every level and point that men are, whether it's the doctor, whether it's the coach, or whether it's the president of the United States. And that day will come too as well, I assure you of this. So, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure, friends, season two. And I want to tell you a couple of things here, that our season finale is Wednesday, May 30th of this season. We do 100 episodes per season. And believe it or not, we're climbing into that right now. We're in the last group of 10 shows right now. And so we invite you in every day. Again, you know how this works here. 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can hear us anywhere in the world on the apps on Android or Apple, or go to iHeartRadio, or just look at America Out Loud Talk Radio. Look that up, and you'll find us in a lot of different places there. We have a very convenient media player as well that you can open up anywhere that you are and listen to the stream of voices. We always say let the silent voices be heard for a reason. Well, this show, again, 5 p.m. The encore is 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every day. But here's the cool thing. All of this work lives in infamy in the podcast world. It lives in podcast, and that's a beautiful thing about podcasts. The beautiful thing about radio is you capture the voices, and then you have them. And so all of these 100 episodes, and the season will play. It will begin the day after, and will play in its entirety again, all 100 episodes. Season 3 launches this next November with a whole cast of new, interesting women. We invite you back to AmericaOutloud.com. Life, Liberty, the Pursuit of Pleasure show page has all the women and the contact points and all the interesting pieces about them. One of the things I hear all the time, friends, is this is an amazing group of women. I hear this consistently from people. I hear it everywhere. We get responses all the time like, wow, you've got some amazing people on this platform. And that's exactly. If you know someone, we have a lot of interest in people who want to be involved in season 3. If there's someone you think that should be part of this, our email is talk@AmericaOutloud.com. You can reach us right there, friends. Thank you again, as always, for being part of this journey and conversation here. We'll keep it going, friends. Linda Martinelli, Jennifer Breeden, Missy Crutchfield. This is Malcolm Out Loud. To be continued, friends.